Welcome to Limitless, the Blind Beginnings podcast where we discuss tips, tricks, and current topics related to all things in the blind and partially sighted community. Now, it is my pleasure to introduce the founder of Blind Beginnings and your host, Sean Marcellet, and whatever co-host is on this week. Now, here's your host, Sean.
Welcome back to Limitless, the Blind Beginnings podcast. I'm your host, Sean Marcellet, and we've got another exciting episode for you today. I'm going to introduce Nika and Jill to tell you a little bit about themselves and about our topic today.
I'm Jill. My level of visual impairment is nothing. I see nothing. I used to see quite a bit out of one eye, but lost all my remaining sight due to retinal detachment.
Hi, my name is Nika, and I have Peter's anomaly. So with this condition, I have some usable vision, a very small amount, mostly in my left eye, which kind of makes the form more complicated because I actually have to prove that I am legally blind. So, you know, that's a good time.
Hi, I'm Colby, and I'm going to be answering some questions about guide dogs, and I currently have a guide dog, a black lab, and his name is Richard. We've been together for about 3.5 years.
And of course, I'm Sean, and I had a guide dog about 3 years ago for about 15 months. So I can certainly shed some light, answer some of the questions. I've gone through the whole process and did use a guide dog for a short time. So Jill and Nika are both in the process of waiting to get guide dogs. They have applied, and Colby and I are going to answer some of their questions today, and hopefully maybe some questions that some of our listeners may have as well. So I thought we could start maybe by just saying why we all decided to apply for a guide dog in the first place.
So I applied for a guide dog actually almost a year ago now. That's weird to realize. So I actually had thought about the application process, I think like 3 or 4 years ago. And I think I was at that time, I just wanted to apply because a lot of my friends had guide dogs, not so much because it was something I thought I was ready for or anything like that. But now, like this past year, it kind of popped into my head again, and I decided to do a lot of research around it. So I like asked a lot of my friends who had guide dogs about their experience and watched a whole bunch of YouTube videos and read blogs and articles. It was kind of crazy how much research I did. And the more that research I did, the more I realized that it was something I really wanted and I thought it would really fit my lifestyle. And I also just really, really love dogs. So I know, and I've grown up with multiple dogs throughout my childhood. So I knew that like I knew how to take care of them. Like it would be a big adjustment guide dog wise, but not just a dog wise. It wouldn't be a big change necessarily. And I just was so tired of my cane getting stuck in every single little crack on the sidewalk. Or if I was shorelining with some grass, every time I'd swing the cane to this grass side, it would get stuck or jab you in the stomach or just, they break down quickly if you use them a lot. Like they're just, I was so tired of the cane and I just felt like I walked really, really slowly with the cane and I can walk quite fast for my height, which is not very tall, but I can walk pretty fast, but the cane just always got in the way. And that was the main frustration that got me into thinking about a guide dog.
What about you, Colby?
Well, all through high school, I knew I always wanted a dog, and I've grown up with pets. When I first started, I definitely know that I was not ready to be looking after somebody else and taking care of somebody else. And I waited a few years after I graduated, and then I realized that I really did want a guide dog. And again, just like Jill was saying, my cane would get stuck and I would poke myself in the stomach so many times that I was just like, I need something. There's got to be something better than this. So that's why I applied mainly. I also felt like when you use a cane, it's definitely a different interaction with public and social aspects. So that was another reason why I really wanted to get a dog. And again, I also did lots of research and I went to the CNI in New Jersey twice, actually.
What about you, Nika?
So with me, I actually have no experience with dogs, and it's kind of going to be a big culture shock, I think, when I get a guide dog, just because I'll have to get used to kind of the guide work and also taking care of a dog. But it's something that always kind of flip-flop in my head every year. Like, I would always consider, oh, is this the right decision for me or is it not? And I didn't do my research on it when I was a teenager, just because I knew that I would not be applying to get a guide dog before I was a legal adult, just because some schools will let you go if you're 16, but I just didn't think as a 16-year-old I had the right maturity level. And I think what kind of sparked my passion into doing all of the research was when I went to university for my first year. Amin, who was on a previous podcast episode, we're in the same program, and kind of seeing the work that she and Robin did kind of sparked me to ask questions, and just seeing how they bonded together, I thought was really cool, and actually seeing it in person. And then I did research on kind of some of the stories. I did, you know, both research on the positives and the negatives. So I feel like I have a really good picture of kind of knowing what to expect and not going in kind of with any, you know, preconceived notions. I know that it's going to be a really difficult decision and a hard journey, but I'm also really excited.
I have a really specific answer to why I got a dog. There's two things. One, I actually was hit by a bus, which sounds very dramatic, just sort of sideswiped by a bus after getting off that bus one morning on my way to work. And I was in a crosswalk, just crossing over to the SkyTrain station. So I know I wasn't in the wrong. And it made me realize that people can't always see me. I'm not invincible. And maybe a guide dog would have stopped in that situation. And that is part of, you know, they generally won't walk in front of a moving vehicle, because not so much because they're trained. I mean, they are sort of trained not to do that, but they also just wouldn't want to do that. Like, who wants to walk in front of a moving vehicle? But anyways, after that happened, I was really afraid for a while to be out crossing streets, especially busy streets, loud streets. And I thought maybe a guide dog would be helpful. And then the other reason was because I had a young child and I was starting to think about how people might react to me at school once he started school. And I kind of thought that I'd like to be the cool mom with the dog rather than that mom with a white cane, because I just know how people love dogs. So kind of what Colby referred to, you know, just the public's reaction or response. So those were my two reasons, both kind of fear-based. Like, I was afraid for a while to cross streets, and I was afraid of kind of being rejected in that school setting. And that motivated me. And I have to say, I was afraid of dogs. I have never had a dog growing up. I was terrified of dogs pretty much my entire life. I had a bit of a scary incident when I was really little. A big dog just knocked me down, probably just wanted to play with me, but it was traumatic for me at the time. So for me to even consider getting a guide dog, it took pretty much getting sideswiped by a bus. So those are my reasons. So questions.
So I know for me, something that I really had to do a lot of research in the beginning stages was which school to go to. And you guys went to different schools. So I'm wondering, like, what kind of sparked you to choose the specific schools that you went to over all of the other options?
Great question. I think there's like 18 schools in North America, yeah. Guide dog schools now. So yeah, it's kind of like choosing a university, right? And every school similar, but also different in philosophy and certain things. So I chose Guide Dogs for the Blind. It was one of the closest schools. So I had a 2-year-old son and it was a 2-week training to get a dog at Guide Dogs for the Blind. So for me, it was like, where can I go for the least amount of time that's the closest to my kid? Which are probably not the reasons most people choose a school. I knew lots of people who had dogs from Guide Dogs for the Blind. They have a campus in California and in Oregon. And I chose Oregon because it was closer to Vancouver. Now I kind of wish I had gone to California because that would be nice. warmer. But I also kind of thought Oregon has a similar climate, lots of rain, as we do here in Vancouver.
That's smart.
And I didn't want a dog that was afraid of rain. turns out my dog did not really love the rain anyways. Oh. So being from Oregon didn't really help necessarily. Now, one of the great things about Guide Dogs for the Blind is that they do pay all your, they cover all your vet expenses. So that's a bit, not all schools do that. And there was no cost. So there are no cost to me. Everything was paid for, the trip down, the training, the dog itself. So the only thing I really had to pay for was the dog's food. So that was a pretty sweet deal. And they're lovely. Like, the people there were amazing. The training facility that where we stayed was, I had my own room with a TV, and you know, it's just, the meals were awesome. They cook free. Like, it was pretty fabulous. It was kind of like being at a resort, except all the hard work of learning how to use a guide dog. So that was my school.
So then I chose the CEI. I chose it for a few reasons. So first of all, they're really about the people. Their mission is or the use of a CEI dog to promote independence and dignity, being a member of society and really living and having a very fulfilling life. So they feel that each student pays flat rate to get your dog. And it's really cool because that price hasn't changed since they opened their doors in 1929. Another reason is I really like their training methods. One thing, I really didn't want to carry like treats with me in all my pockets. And so that's a school that doesn't use food rewards for doing tasks. But if you are using the clicker and training individual things, then you do use some treats, but it's not every time and you reduce them. Those would probably be my reasons to go to the school. And it was a really lovely campus. We all had our own room. We didn't have a TV, but we had a phone, lots of cool devices you could use. Every room had an Alexa. And yeah, like Sean's saying, it was like you were in a resort, except you were training and learning how to work with your dog.
One thing I was curious about, so for me, like when I was doing a bit of research, like I came across both those schools quite a bit. And I actually didn't know this until recently, but I feel like the States has more guide dog schools than Canada, but Canada definitely does have at least a couple that I came across. So how did you make your decision, either of you, on staying in Canada and going, looking at one of their schools or going to the States?
Yeah, for me, I did look into BC and Alberta Guide Dog Association, and they do in-home training here. And they're located in Tawasin, so that's really local, but they weren't even taking a wait list at the time. It purely came down to, and then the next closest school at the time was in Ontario. And I felt like Oregon was much closer than Ontario. That just felt like a really long way to be away from my kid. And that really dictated, like, if I had not done this when my son was so young, I probably wouldn't have chosen the school for those reasons. But at the time, that was like just really key in my decision.
Right. What about you, Colby?
Yeah. So for me, I looked at BC and Alberta guide dogs, and they were also not taking applications when I applied.
Right.
So I looked at a few in the States, and I was actually debating on a few. Well, first of all, I knew more people who had gone to the CEI than any school in Ontario. And I felt like if I was going across the country, then I wanted to go to school where I knew people that had successful partnerships. And I just really liked the training and everything that went with that school.
It's interesting because if I was choosing a dog now, like one of the, I remember after I had already started the process and was well into it, I read an article about somebody whose guide dog, they were running like 10K and half marathon mm-hmm. races with their guide dog, which is something I would love to be able to do. And I remember asking at GVB while I was there, like, can I run with my dog? And they did not recommend that. So now if I ever did it again, I would be looking at a school that trains the dogs to run.
Yeah, because I know Guiding mm-hmm. Eyes for the Blind has a running program.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's so cool.
Yeah.
I never even thought about like going and like for runs, like marathons and stuff like that with your dog, but like I'm sure they would love it because it'd be literally a change of pace for them. So mm-hmm. I'd probably enjoy a bit of a run. It's kind of cool. I don't know. I like that.
Yeah.
So there's like a whole bunch of like guide dog Facebook groups and stuff like that. And when you post a question, there's a lot of varying opinions and suggestions, and it can get kind of confusing and overwhelming. But one thing that I was wondering about that I've seen a lot of people post in those groups as well is, let's say you have a class day to go do training for your dog. Do you, like, is it recommended by, like, the school to kind of have stuff ahead of time, like beds or toys or food or bowls or anything? Like, do you have that ahead of time, or do you kind of, like, how does that work?
Yeah, that's a great question. For me, I didn't know what to get, and I didn't want to get the wrong things, but because I was there for 2 weeks, but my husband was here, I was like, okay, we need a kennel. The dog sleeps in a kennel. He's used to a kennel, or she's used to a kennel. She sleeps in a kennel every night. We need a kennel. And I could literally tell him the measurements of the kennel that was in my room at the school, right? Or we're using these fleece mats as dog beds and tie downs. And like, yeah, there was, and the kind of bones that we were given for our dogs and the kind of toys that were recommended, because there were toys that were not recommended. Mm-hmm. So I learned everything while I was there. I didn't really have anything set up when I left. But I had somebody on the other end kind of preparing for us coming home. So that helped a lot.
Did you find that a 2 week training process was kind of enough to learn anything? Just because I know like one thing that drew me to the Seeing Eye was that it was 3.5 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. At the time I did, I thought I was ready to go home and I thought I knew everything. But looking back, no, it was not long enough. I wish, and I think for your first dog especially, maybe once you've had a dog, I missed my kid and I wanted to go home, but I don't think I was ready. I think 2 weeks was too fast.
Yeah, and I guess like with me, it's, you know, I don't have any dependents to worry about, and I've never even had a pet dog, so I don't know anything of what I'm doing, so like that's what drew me to apply there specifically.
Yeah. And I mean, I was afraid of dogs, so it probably took me the first week or more to get over that, right? Like, I have to put booties on the dog. I have to feed the dog out of my hand. I have to give her treats out of my hand. Like, what? Where her teeth are? I was terrified. So I don't even know how focused I could have been really on the training at that point, because it was just so overwhelming to me to have this dog in my space all the time. Like, you mean I have to sleep in the same room with her, like right now from the beginning?
And do you think if you like, so like I grew up with, I think I counted and I like over 10 dogs throughout my life. And it's, I'm like 24, so it's quite a bit of dogs in my life. And they've like been a whole bunch of different breeds and sizes and genders and colors, and it's been great. But do you think like having, I guess, that little bit of background with like pet dogs helps when going and doing training?
Definitely. Mm-hmm. I think I didn't know that when the dog's barking at me, ironically, she did bark, which a lot of guide dogs don't bark at all, but that was because she was happy and she wanted to play. I thought she was mad at me, right? Like just stuff like that, or grooming her. We had to groom and brush their teeth. I did not do the tooth brushing. I was terrified. And the like all of that stuff. Yeah, I think putting on a raincoat was something I had to learn. If you've had a dog that's worn a raincoat, you know how to do that already. So the learning curve for me was like tremendous. Whereas probably, I don't know, Colby, you've had dogs before, right?
Yeah, but I was never, a lot of the things that I learned in class, I never done with my dog because it wasn't me who was necessarily taking care of it. So like brushing it and cleaning its teeth and ears and eyes, things that I didn't do that with the other dogs. My parents always did that kind of stuff.
Right.
And just, you know, taking them out to do their business and everything. I would say, yeah, like I didn't know if I should bring anything or have anything ready. And I did end up bringing a toy, like a stuffed toy, with me down there. But I, like Sean, I really like the crates that were in class. So I ordered one from Amazon.
That's
and
smart.
It was shipped and it was there when I got home. So that was all good. And yeah, and then they'll give you some food. They'll give you some
bonus
toys. So, and plus you will probably get a chance to go to a pet store too. So you can always get stuff there too if you need something. Or,
Another thing I guess I was curious about in relation to like once you get the dog and get all like everything you need for it, like a crate or a bed or bowls, etc. If you like your house, like the way that you have your like rooms and house and everything set up, like how did you kind of figure out where to put the dog's stuff once you got home? So like, let's say like, did you, if you get the crate in your bedroom, like how do you figure out where to put it or like the bowls in the kitchen? Cause I know like our pet bowls or like our bowls for our pets at home, like especially the water bowl, like it'd always be filled. But then like if it got moved a little bit, I couldn't see it and I'd kick it and spill it. And it was trying to clean up the whole mess. Like it was a big thing.
Well, the crate, I put it beside my bed because that's how it was at the school. And I had room to do that. And then, yeah, my dog's food and water is in our, it's not in our kitchen, but it's kind of in the room where you come in from outside. And yeah, it does spill sometimes, but you have to just figure out what the best spot for you, and then you know what's there at least. And it's also good if you put it on, it's like a mat or a towel or something.
That's smart.
And you'll learn, like when you're in class, when the dogs have like set water or free water.
It's on a schedule like kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Right.
Linda had several sort of spots, like in the living room, there was a kind of mat for her with a tie down beside it. So when we were eating dinner, the only way to keep her out of the kitchen was to actually put her on tie down. And then she had her kennel upstairs. She had her own room.
Fancy.
the kennel went in the spare room, which is really close. That's where all the bedrooms are upstairs. So we were all up there, but she had her kennel there. At work, I had another bed for her with another tie down. So yeah, she kind of just had her designated areas.
Like in each room, kind of.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Cause I'm like, how much am I going to have to like rearrange my stuff? But I guess it all depends on like how much you have room for stuff and like if you have to rearrange, I guess it's not that big a deal. So it's just like, I just like been sitting here like, okay, so in my living room, I want to like, if I get a bed, where do I put it? Or like in the kitchen, it's food. Like I've been kind of slowly planning possibly where I want to put things.
I have a really random question kind of related to dogs eating stuff that they're not supposed to, which is, you know, obviously when I'm in my room and stuff, my guide dog is going to be with me because, you know, it's with me 24/7. And something that I'm always worried about is if I have, like, I have makeup out and I'm worried dog will, like, jump up and eat something they shouldn't. Like, this
like
is
think
actually
it's
a
food
really
or something.
This is a big fear to me is that, like, you know, or if I'm, like, looking away for a second, my dog will jump up and eat, like, a open makeup compact or something that's open and get sick. Is that a thing that happens, or is it kind of something they teach you about, is the storage of certain products?
I haven't heard a lot about makeup products, but they do say, like, it's kind of like if you had a child, you baby-proof or puppy-proof your room. So
puppy-proof,
that might be if you have stuff on your floor, like a garbage or clothing or whatever, you need to put that, at least for the first while, up or somewhere that the dog can't get into it. Usually after a period of time, the dog will settle in and then you don't worry as much about those things.
My dog did destroy a sock once that I left on the stairs. Oh, a brand new pair of wool socks. She only destroyed one, but
of course
one sock's not very useful. But I
did
think
she eat it?
I don't think she ate it. She just sort of tore it apart. So more like a toy. Mm-hmm. And it was while we weren't home. So, you know, again, like you can either put your dog in the crate when you go out, or it depends how you handle that and how long you've had the dog. I think the kitchen is more of a concern. We used to put like our food garbage up out of reach just in case, so she wouldn't try to like open the lid with her nose and get in there. I have heard crazy stories of dogs getting stuff off the counter. They're not supposed to do that.
Yeah.
And I think food would be more of a concern than makeup. But yeah, I don't know about makeup either.
Yeah, because I have the thing is, I have food scented makeup. So
yeah, that's true. Yeah. Like some makeup smells like chocolate
and then, chocolate's poisonous to dogs. And then another thing I'm worried about is I have a lot of cords on the floor.
Yeah, do you have to like tuck those or like tape them down or anything with the cords? Is that something that schools recommend? Because like I have lots of cables and stuff going around. Like a phone charger. It's like my phone charger is like resting on the floor. By my bed, and then I can plug my phone in and whatever, right? Like, is that a concern? Like having just like cords like that laying around? No.
I don't think so.
My dog actually licked an electrical vent that had a plug partially in.
Oh,
zapped himself on the nose.
Poor dude. Well, that'll teach him.
Yeah, that's true. I guess they'll
never
learn.
Never done that again.
Something. So I know, like it's up to you, kind of where you bring the dog and where you don't. Like, for example, like I know some people don't bring their dogs to a movie theater because they don't want their dog to be licking up the popcorn covered floor the whole time. But like, is there a recommended time frame that you leave the dog? Like, is there a few, like no more than an hour, like no more than like five, whatever it is, right? Like
I was told 4 hour blocks of time maximum. They can probably go longer than that, but it's just, they're not used to being on their own.
Right.
So 4 hours is kind of, they'll just, and in the beginning, she would go in her kennel and she'd just, it'd be like she was going to sleep, right?
Right.
When she'd go in her kennel, that was her safe place. That was like going into her room and she would be fine. I don't think I ever did leave her longer than 4 hours, which is part of why if when your dog retires, a lot of people can't keep them because they go to work all day long and they're not there with the dog and the dog's not used to being alone. So it's not like a pet dog that is used to the family all leaves and then comes back, you know, 9 or 10 hours later, right?
Yeah, because we always just left our pet dogs at home throughout the day because we all had school or work or whatever, right? So do they like, okay, once a month you can leave it for like a few hours. Like, do they say like, how often a month or like, is there a thing like that? Is that a thing?
No, I mean, over the course of the weekend, I might leave my dog a few times if I'm going grocery shopping and then we're back home and now we're going to go to my mom's for dinner and we're not going to bring the dog. It's fine. As long as it's not like day after day, big stretches of time.
Yeah.
There were probably some evenings when we might've gone out where I would have fed her dinner, relieved her, and then left and been gone maybe longer than 4 hours, but it was nighttime. So when I got home at like 11 or something, I would let her, you know, take her out to go to the bathroom and then we'd just all go to bed again. Right. So she was probably sleeping for most of that. She would have been fine. So it's your own judgment. And it's kind of the trade-off of like, well, if I'm going to a really loud concert, is it better to leave her on her own for a few hours or drag her into that loud, crowded environment, right?
Right.
Yeah. Or like something else I was wondering was that I was talking to someone and they kind of said that having a dog in the ways like you have to be in the same mindset as like a car. So for example, if you go out to a restaurant and, you know, you have a couple drinks and you're slightly intoxicated, then you shouldn't be utilizing a guide dog. Is that true? Like, is that something they teach you in school?
Yes.
Yes. I mean, if you know yourself too, I think. So if you know that you're fine after a couple, then go ahead and use your dog. But if you know that, no, I'm not, then I wouldn't take it.
Okay. So if you know you are fine, then it is okay to still.
Yeah, I think
as long
if you're...
As you're
not stumbling and slurring and obviously impaired.
Something else I was kind of curious about, like, I'm assuming that when you're doing training, you're shown like the different places to put your dog when you're on, like on transit or on like a boat or in a vehicle, or even like if you're in a meeting and like you're there's a whole bunch of people, or even a lecture hall, like all those different places where you put your dog, are they pretty much the same, or does it depend on like the seating arrangement, I guess?
Well, I would say that they definitely go through all of that in class because they realize that a lot of people, no matter what they're doing, a lot of the time they're with other people and they're social. Mm-hmm. So in having your dog settle and sit down and being quiet is really one thing that really focus on, and they will help you position your dog in what they think is the best spots, usually beside you or in front of you or between your feet.
Okay.
And you can definitely ask them those types of things when they're there.
And while you're in the training, you're eating in, you know, it's not a restaurant, but we had like two round tables with, you know, four or five people around each table, and most of us had a dog. So you're kind of like practicing that every single meal. Oh, okay. And then in the lectures, it was more like sitting around a living room. But again, you're kind of practicing, where would I put my dog in this situation? And then we would go on, you know, in the vans to get from the facility to where we were going to train that day. And again, it's like, where do you put them in the van? Where do you put them in the bus? And you do practice all of those things too. Good. Yeah.
And another thing I had related to going like out, I'm in school and I'm going on campus and walking around campus and going for coffee and sitting in lectures and whatever. Is there like a little like recommended little care package sort of thing you bring with you for the dog, like a towel to sit on or like, or dry them off with, or like a bowl or something? Is there like, or is it kind of what you think would be best, or does the school kind of like recommend things?
They do send you home with a little bag that has like some paper towels, some pickup bags, and a couple of treats, I think, if you're going out. Especially they give that to you to take on the plane when you go home, in case your dog has any issues.
I didn't know.
But, like, yeah. generally, the, like, things that you bring when you go out, I would say you're going to learn that every pocket that you have will contain bags.
Yes.
I can see that. That's so funny.
That and
I got a collapsible bowl for water wherever you go, so it just flattens to be kind of like a plate, and then you can it out to be a bowl.
Yeah.
And that was a handy thing to always have with me.
So I would have a bag usually with me, and a bowl, some bags, a Gentileader, which is something they'll give you to use. And basically, it's just another tool to use to work with your dog.
Right.
And it's really, I know, like, at first, it kind of seems like pain, but I take it everywhere I go, and I have such an improvement of using it with my dog. So, but other than that, I mean, like, if you're going out for a long time, yeah, I would bring like water or a bowl for your dog so that they can have a drink. Maybe bring a couple treats.
Raincoat if you live here.
Yeah. Do you have to dry off their paws and like stuff when you go into buildings? Like, is that a thing?
No. You don't
have to. Okay.
I have when it's been like, because of where I live, when it's been really snowy or just wet, I have gone into a washroom and just got paper towel and wiped my dog down just so he's not like dripping everywhere.
Right. Yeah. Cause you know, like the wet dog smell, like,
yes.
It's going to be like, especially where we all, like in the lower mainland, it rains.
Yeah.
Ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And like, I guess you just kind of get used to, like, if you don't have a raincoat, or like, I guess the raincoat might help a bit with it not getting wet, the dog not getting wet. So there's not as much of a wet dog smell. I feel like that might just be something you got to get used to.
Yeah, you do. You are supposed to groom your dog every day. I probably did every other day. And there are, I'm sure, people who do less than that. But part of the argument for that is you are bringing your dog into public places And although you signed up for a dog, all the people in those public places didn't. Mm. And so to be fair, so that your dog's not shedding all over every environment you go to, you know, the more you brush the dog, the less that's going to happen. And I feel like the more you brush the dog, the less that smell also happens. I didn't actually bathe her that often. I didn't need to.
No, you don't.
Right. Yeah. But the brushing was very regular. Mm-hmm. And that helped.
And I've heard they like the grooming as a bonding thing for that, for you guys too. I've heard that.
Yeah.
It's a really good way to bond.
Once you stop being afraid.
For Sean.
I actually have a question kind of relating to other people, which is, in university, one of the accommodations I have is being able to sit up at the front of the class or lecture hall. Mm-hmm. And I know that guide dogs or service animals in general are kind of the exception. They're allowed to be in universities and like rideshare and like Uber and stuff.
Yeah, they go everywhere that you have the right to
but,
go.
But what I wanted to know was, let's say your professor is allergic to dogs and I have to sit at the front of the class because of my accommodation, then what would I do with my guide dog, for example?
Yeah, like what do you do if someone has allergies or if they're scared of a dog?
Yeah, or even like going to a friend's house, like am I allowed to say that I'm allowed to bring my guide dog everywhere card, or would I have to respect that because it's their house? Like kind of how do you deal with
that's the public? Good
point. The negative side of the public thing, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I would say if it's a public place like a school, then yes, you bring your dog. But the one thing, like if I go to somebody's house and I know that they have a dog, or even if they don't, I'll say, is it okay if I bring Richard? And they can say yes or no. Or I might say, this time I think I'm going to leave him because maybe the dogs don't get along or whatever that is.
It really boils down to kind of being respectful of the people in your life too, right? Like I know some people, I wouldn't want my dog in their vehicle because I know she was going to shed, and I know them well enough from before I had a dog to know that that was something they wouldn't like. And so it's not that, yes, I'm allowed to, but I'm not going to make people uncomfortable intentionally. And if it's something where I don't actually need the dog, like it, you kind of have to weigh all of that, right? If you can't get to their house without your dog, then figure that out. Like, let them know. I'm obviously going to be bringing my guide dog. Is that okay? And, you know, I guess be open to the fact that maybe they will say, I'd rather you didn't. And then maybe that means you guys have to come up with a different plan and they come to your house instead because you need your dog. So
what about if someone's like scared or allergic? What do you do in that
like
situation?
In the classroom, would you like just tie your dog down like somewhere else in the class, like opposite of where the professor is usually, or...
If you can sit somewhere else, but I wouldn't put the dog somewhere else.
Separate
from you. Not in public.
No. These dogs, then you could have other people coming up to it and petting it and things, doing things that you might not be able to see happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or what if it's like Colby, I know you took science classes and stuff. Mm-hmm. So what would you do in a lab? Because you can't really have like your dog with you because, you know, you might like pour some hydrochloric acid by accidentally.
Yeah, so what I did, I had a really good lab instructor and she was very accommodating. So what I would do is where my lab station was, just like a couple feet from it, there was a table that was like not a lab area, just the table in the class. So I would put Richard and I would tie him to the table. And he would just stay there while I worked. And he was close enough that he could see me that he would just lay there.
So you weren't separated, but he was in a safe place where he couldn't.
Yeah. I mean, I guess in somewhat we were separated, but we weren't like far apart from each other.
He wasn't in a different room or something. It was a few feet away. Is that kind of what you would do if you're at a gym, or like for me, I do swim practice. So like... Yeah. Like, how do you know, like, especially in the pool, like, I can't just get out and make sure the dog's fine every 5 seconds.
Right.
Like, how do I, like, know people aren't going to touch it and pet it and that's not going to get splashed every time I do a stroke kind of thing, right? Like,
yeah, not taking my dog to a pool before. I just haven't had an occasion to do that, but I know lots of people that do. And I think what you would do is when you go to the pool, you could say, you know, like, I have a guide dog, I'm gonna put him or her on and tie her on, say, the pool deck or something like that, or even a lifeguard that's out at this pool area. And you could just say, can you just watch, make sure people don't interact with my dog or something like that.
You could also just ask them, where would be a good place for me to tie him or her up while I'm swimming?
Like, we pretty much just put our gear like on benches and grab whatever gear we need and put it by the pool, like the edge of the pool. Like our bags and clothes and stuff are just like on a bench along the wall of like the pool area.
Yeah. Another thing that you might maybe could do is, so you can get small crates. They're called pop-up crates and they're really nice. They're a lot smaller and they're more flexible and they fit in your backpack all full of them. So you can get one of those. And if your dog likes the crate, I mean, not all dogs do.
Right.
But, that would be one thing, and then you can zip them in and they're just there.
Yeah. Another thing I heard about what you can do for stuff like that is like you can get sign, like harness signs.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if you guys have had any experience with those signs and like if you find them effective, if you don't.
I didn't use one.
I have it's a sign that's on his harness, but it's not. I actually really want to get one that I believe Almond has for Robin, actually. But the one I have, it just has like pictures on it and then the things that are like crossed out.
Oh yeah.
So like a picture of eyes, a picture of a hand touching, feeding. Some people see it, but not everyone. So I think it depends on how you feel.
And back to the pool gym situation, you may also determine that there are certain places that when you go there, it's just easier to not bring the dog. Like picking my son up at daycare, for example, I would come home from work, drop her off at home, and then walk across the street to the daycare and pick him up without the dog because it was too much for me to manage a small child and a dog. Right. They walked at different paces. It just didn't really work. And then the kids in the daycare, of course, super excited to see the dog. So then there's all that interaction. So you know, just like, okay, it's time to go to the daycare. That's not a time when I bring my dog.
Right. So I guess like, that's something you can kind of try out and see how it goes and I guess decide from there. Cause like, I just like, again, my main thing is I don't want people to keep petting the dog, even though it was like laying there on the side, like by my stuff. Like I still don't want people to pet him.
Right.
It's also like, I'm pretty sure it's far enough away that it's not going to get splashed, but like obviously people are walking around dripping water. Like the pool, most of the pool deck is wet anyways. So like, even if I lay the dog on the towel, like it still could get wet. And like, that would be kind of miserable for the dog to lay there all wet.
Sometimes,
but then like to go home, like
The staff
on our bus rides
at these places will sometimes say that, like, you know, especially if they love dogs, they'll just be like, oh, it can stay back here in the office with me while you're swimming.
That's a good idea.
I have heard of that in different situations. It's totally case dependent, but then it's nowhere near you, so you should probably bring your cane because you're going to need it to get through the pool now. But it's just totally off the deck and not in the way of any of the gym equipment or the pool stuff or any of that.
Do you know what, because I know you were in the Paralympics, so like what do Paralympic athletes do, or athletes in general at a, for example, a swim meet or something, what would they do with their guide dogs? Do you bring your guide to a competition, or is it better to leave them at home, or?
It probably depends on the country you're going to and how easy it is to bring your dog with you.
Yeah, because like that's something I'm concerned about, because, you know, like now during COVID, I won't have to deal with it, but eventually I'll have to go to more swim meets.
Yeah, I think I would, you know, there's lots of factors to weigh, like how much traveling am I going to do independently while I'm there? Is it a one-day meet or is it a multiple-day meet? How long does my dog have to be away from me if I don't bring it? Is there anybody to look after the dog? But like if you're just doing a swim meet where you're going to be at the pool all day long, that's not very exciting for the dog anyway. So maybe it would have more fun staying with a family friend or something and getting to go to a park or something. You know, I don't know. So people do bring their dogs to competitions, and you know, while you're not in competition, you can be with your dog. But, and then during the competition, you've got to find someone to look after it, or usually have somebody who's willing to like hold your dog while you're racing or doing whatever you're doing.
I like the crate idea Colby mentioned, like the little pop-up crate. That's a good idea.
Yeah, I did.
If the dog likes the crate, I guess.
I had one of those for work excursions, like overnight kind of things too.
Oh yeah.
And yeah, it was handy. So maybe we could talk about some of the advantages, like the best things about having a dog. I know for me, I felt when I was using a guide dog that there was less unasked for help from strangers that I would encounter. Oh,
like they didn't ask you if they need, you wanted help? Yes. Like they're just like, going to leave you alone?
Exactly. Oh, I was left alone a lot more.
That's so nice.
Also, people spoke to me more normally. And what I mean by that is I feel like sometimes with the white cane, people are very patronizing. There's like this assumption that you are helpless, but with the dog, there's almost this assumption that you must be capable if you're taking care of this animal or if you've got this animal with you. So I feel like it was like people just talk to me normally rather than how they do with the cane.
Oh, that's so nice.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that.
Yeah, which was really nice. And then the other thing, I felt more confident walking home at night. Now, in my neighborhood, there's bears. So it was the wildlife factor more than, you know, just random people that might do bad things. But even that, it's like, it's not so much that guide dogs aren't trained to attack somebody if they attack you, but the bad guys that might be thinking of doing something like that are probably going to think twice if they see you've got a dog with them, right? It's just like, why would you even go there? So it made me feel a little bit more confident.
Yeah, I definitely feel a lot more confident when I have Richard with me, and I felt slower and like more awkward when I was using my cane because I didn't want to like run into things as much. And in this case, you don't really do that unless your dog gets really distracted, which can happen, definitely.
Fair enough.
I also really love that they can like find things. So if you teach them, say, like a certain route to, say, coffee shop or somewhere that you frequent, they can take you there. And it's really cool to see if you've gone somewhere and then you haven't gone there in a long time and then you go to go there, they know it. They recognize it.
Well, like right they remember the route almost?
Yes.
Oh, that's so cool.
And it's so cool. It's like they are like, oh yeah, I know where we're going. Like, come on this way. And that's really cool.
Is it kind of right where like if you walk a route and there's like a few different things you've stopped at during the route, is it true where they kind of like point their head or their nose at that place? Like, you want to go here? Sometimes
they will do that.
Okay, that's so cool. I love that so much.
I also really like that when I would walk into a building a lot of times, I never knew which way to go. So that's really nice because if you just say forward, they'll usually take you whatever is straight. So even if it's not exactly where you are, you still end up somewhere that you want to, which is really cool, I find, because it was like, okay, I got in the building, but now how do I get to the counter or whatever that was?
Yeah, so they might take you to the elevator. Oh, no, you don't want that? Mm-hmm. Okay, and then maybe take you, like they're going to show you the things that they think you normally like to see, right?
That's so cool.
In an unfamiliar place, yeah.
So this might be kind of a personal question, but obviously there is a difference between guide dogs and therapy dogs, but I've kind of heard a lot of stories saying that having a dog, even though it wasn't trained to be a therapy dog, helped with kind of mental health and anxiety. Did you find that that was true?
I would say yes. So I actually had two dogs. My first dog was a golden retriever and her name was Jessica. She didn't work out in the end, but she was very emotionally sensitive to me when I first had her. It was really cute. She would sit and put her front paws around my neck like a hug.
That's like a hug. That's so cute.
Really cool. Yeah. And so that was really cool.
I would have hated that. That would have scared me so much.
And then also, I would say Richard, he's not as in tuned with that, but he will, like, if, say, I'm in my bed and I'm not feeling well or whatever, he will come in, see me, and then I'll go out. Go see my mom. Oh, she's good. Come back to me.
Like, just a little check-in.
Yeah, he so just cute. Goes around to everyone and sees, like,
oh my God, I would
love
you
guys
that.
Are doing good. And then I'll come back. And
that's so cute.
Mom, it's like, let's do the routine check on the household.
Pretty much, yeah. I remember I was at my friend's house and she had a guide dog and her and I were just like sitting on the floor and her dog came over, like didn't even know me yet. The dog was the first time it met me and like her guide dog came and like kissed us both on the forehead and went lay down, like just checking in. It was so cute.
Yeah,
I think that's something I'm excited about is like when I'm, if I'm lost or by myself or at nighttime alone, I feel like I'll just feel so much safer.
Yeah,
and I do suffer from anxiety. So just knowing that I have my little partner in crime.
I think the companionship of a dog is something people really appreciate. I think my dog, it didn't work out, and it turns out years later I found out she has anxiety. And so really? I think, and I don't know if I caused it, if it was because of working with me or just working in general, or if she always had it, I'm not really sure. But I actually think in those situations where we got lost, we were both kind of stressed out. And it wasn't, I didn't feel like I maybe made it worse for her. So I don't know, like it probably depends on the dog, but yeah, overall, I think dogs are just awesome in general for mental health, right? So, but since I'm talking about some of the things that didn't work out for me, a couple of things that I didn't like about having a guide dog were a lot of dog hair on my clothes, in the car, like just always thinking about, my dog was yellow, a yellow lab. And I, especially in the winter, wear a lot of black pants, black coat, you know, darker colors. So I just felt like I was always, whether there was hair on me or not, I was always self-conscious that there probably was hair on me. And maybe like a lint roller was something I always had in my bag along with the dog bowl and stuff. But it was something I just kind of was self-conscious about a lot. It was a bit harder to be spontaneous. So like, unless you always brought a meal, a dog's meal, you know, worth of food with you, you can't spontaneously decide to go out for dinner with friends or, spend the night somewhere or whatever, right? Like you just had to plan ahead. And one of the things that was stressful was if I was doing a presentation downtown or somewhere in an unfamiliar environment, I wouldn't know like where will there be grass if I need to relieve her? Where is there a garbage can for afterwards? And there was a situation of like being on the SkyTrain carrying a bag of her stuff. The relieving situation I found a bit stressful. And I also found in new places where we'd never been together before, if I had never been there, it was really hard for me to give directions to the dog. So it's like Colby was talking about going into a building and having the dog just take her somewhere, which she found comforting. But I found that a bit like, I don't know if there's a door to say, find the door. I don't know if there's stairs to say, find the stairs. So I found that I was a lot of time in a new environment, just putting down the harness and taking out my cane and kind of using my cane to feel my way around to figure out what was there instead of working my dog. So they're amazing in a familiar route, but then new routes, I found it a bit challenging. Yeah, those are kind of some of the challenges I found.
It's definitely not easy having a guide dog. There's definitely a lot of work that goes into it. There's definitely days where I felt like, oh my God, like it's just so much work. But at the same time, I've gotten more positive, I think, out of having a dog. You do kind of have to have a bit of a schedule, which can be hard, especially when you are not used to having a schedule. Also, just making sure that you're not only taking care of yourself, but you also have to look out for the dogs as well. So, you know, seeking it out, training with it, like doing obedience, working it, making sure to maintain all its skills. And yeah, I mean, like, I still do a lot of things and I can be fairly, I would say, spontaneous, but there is definitely times where I wish that I didn't have my dog so it was easier to do certain things. But at the end of the day, I don't regret getting a dog or having a dog.
Yeah, and even though my experience, my dog didn't make it, she got to retire early, but I sort of realized through the process that it wasn't the right thing for me at this time in my life, but I'm still glad I did it because, well, for one thing, she helped me get over my fear of dogs. I'm definitely not afraid like I was. I even like dogs now. Like, if it was dog versus cat, always dog for me. That's really huge for me because after a lifetime of being afraid, that it's just really nice not to be. And I don't know, I might even try it again in the future when, you know, maybe when my child is a bit older or my life is not taking me to so many different places all of the time, more routine. It might be something that I want to give another shot to. So I think go for it if this is what you want.
I almost, right before COVID hit, I was scheduled to do the home interview and everything. And then like the class date that I had asked for would have been May or June. So like, I was so close to getting the dog. And then COVID happened and it probably won't be for like another year or more. But it's like, I don't know, it's just definitely something that I know I want. But one more question I had for you guys that I feel like is going to be maybe a big one. How do you deal with the public? Whether they come up to you and ask questions or like, oh, I had a dog just like yours. Or you get like, they try and deny you entrance to like a restaurant or something. Like, how do you deal with that? Because I know there's been a lot of like, just there's so many things around that. And I feel like that's one of my biggest concerns.
Or even like, how do you be assertive? Because I'm just not like an assertive conflict person at all. Like if someone says, oh, like you're correcting your dog, you're an abusive handler, I'll kind of be like, I'm sorry. Like, I'm just so wishy-washy.
Well, first of all, you will get practice in class and they will help you with all of that. But one thing, if you know what you're doing and, if people try to deny you, you will have the knowledge to know what you can answer and what you can say to them. I've never really had an issue with a restaurant. I've never had people tell me that I'm like too rough or whatever with him.
I never did either. And I was really worried about taking taxis because I'd heard stories of people being denied.
Oh, yeah.
Every time I did take a taxi with my dog, I would tell them in advance, I'm blind, I'm traveling with a guide dog, just want to let you know. And every time I got into the car, I would even say to the driver, I'm, you know, really grateful that you didn't have an issue with the dog. Oh, no, not at all. It's fine. Yeah. And so I don't know, like, and I was never denied access anywhere either. I mean, I only had her for 15 months, but there was never a situation where I worried about it too. I worried about it a lot.
Yeah, like that's my biggest concern.
And I think it's very much the individual you're dealing with in that situation.
Right, but that's fair.
Yeah, but for me, it was never an issue. And as for the public and their questions and their comments, and I mean, I had people say, oh, I know I'm not supposed to, but I just can't help it, as they were petting her on the SkyTrain, right?
Lovely.
Yeah, so that kind of stuff would happen occasionally. Or I would go down to pet my dog and somebody else's hand was there.
There's a random hand.
Yes. Yeah. So people will definitely break that rule. They just can't help themselves. And that's probably the way I had to be the most assertive, like, please don't touch my dog. And I, because she was so easily distracted, you know, if people did ask me, can I pet your dog? I had to say no, which was hard for me because I'm a bit of a people pleaser. So, but I just
getting
knew.
Used to having to say yes or no. And
you say it. So my thing was, if I let you pet my dog, she's going to want to go off the train with you and she's not going to be focused on me. That's what I started saying. And then it didn't feel like I was being mean. It was just like, I need to say no, or I'm not going to have a way home. So
yeah. Yeah, that's fair.
Well, I think this has been awesome. Thank you guys so much for this conversation.
I just want to say thank you guys for answering all of our questions. It makes me feel better, and like just having some kind of idea of how to deal with situations and what to do. I personally feel a lot better knowing at least some of your guys' experiences and stuff like that. So thank you so much for answering those for us.
Oh, you're welcome. If anybody listening has more questions, you can always email us at limitless@blindbeginnings.ca. And we will definitely do our best to answer questions on a future episode. But thank you. Thank you, yes. Nika and Jill, for your questions. Thanks, Colby, for your expertise. Thanks, all of you, for listening. This is Limitless, the Blind Beginnings podcast. I'm your host, Sean Marcellet. Please join us next time.
For more information on Blind Beginnings and its mission to inspire and support children and youth who are blind or partially sighted and their families, visit www.blindbeginnings.ca.